Well, thank you for the introduction. And at the outset, I want to acknowledge the support of the NIPA Tritici CAP project, which funded this research and made it all possible, and acknowledge the contribution of my colleague, Catherine Frels, who will speak later in this session, who did the very physical work of this project along with me. It was, without her, it would have been impossible. I think this morning Celeste gave a very fine introduction to the rationale for the importance of nitrogen use efficiency in cereals, and I would only add to that that for the Nebraska producer, nitrogen represents 25% of the variable cost of production. So the efficient utilization of that key variable cost is critically important for agriculture in the state that I am from. I'll introduce you to the Hard Winter Wheat Association mapping panel that we worked with. It's a fascinating panel in the field because it is 299 genotypes that originate from as far south as Texas and as far north as Montana and North Dakota. And not only is it geographically diverse in origin, but it's temporally diverse in that it spans the history of wheat production in the Great Plains, from some of the earliest land races brought in by the Mennonite settlers through to wheats that are currently being released today as wheat varieties by producers. The consequence of that is illustrated in the picture on the right. And if the mouse will cooperate here, I'll point out to you that there are tall wheats and short wheats in the panel, conditioned by the reduced height alleles in the group 4 chromosomes. There are early maturing wheats and late maturing wheats in the panel, largely conditioned by photoperiod sensitivity or insensitivity alleles in the group 2 chromosomes. So both the temporal and geographic diversity of the panel and some major genes that are variable within the panel made it a very interesting and challenging panel for us to work with. The trials were conducted in Nebraska, and they were conducted as a split plot design with nitrogen treatments as main effects. And these nitrogen rates, the low and moderate rates, represent 45 and 75% of South Dakota state recommended rates for nitrogen fertility. The subplots were the genotypes in the trial arranged in an augmented design with Jagger and Settler as our repeated checks, grouped with 20 test genotypes. Now, the TCAP project was designed really to address the challenges imposed upon us by climate change. And we know that one of the consequences of climate change is more variable climates. And that's what we encountered. In 2012, in mid-June, we were harvesting our samples at physiological maturity. And in 2013, in mid-June, we were still doing canopy spectral reflectance. Two very, very different crop seasons. Our yield levels averaged about 3.5 metric tons in 2012 and about 5.5 metric tons in 2013. So some pretty good yielding trials. We measured nitrogen use efficiency manually, the old-fashioned way. And though we had a very nice NIR for measuring nitrogen, calibrated to combustion analysis, a lot of work. It's impossible to really talk meaningfully about nitrogen use efficiency traits without having some acronyms, so I have to walk you through these, and bear with me for this. Total nitrogen yield is the combination of grain nitrogen yield plus the vegetative nitrogen yield, that nitrogen that's in the above-ground vegetative tissues at physiological maturity. That provided us a valuable estimate of the available nitrogen in the field. We used total nitrogen yield to estimate TNY max, the 95th percentile of total nitrogen yield in each main plot. So this became our estimate of available nitrogen for the plots in the field. Post-anthesis nitrogen uptake is the difference between the total nitrogen at maturity and nitrogen at anthesis. Nitrogen uptake efficiency is that total nitrogen yield as a fraction of what was available to the crop. Nitrogen harvest index is the grain N yield. Oops, I knew I was going to do that. Over the total nitrogen yield. And nitrogen utilization efficiency, which I'll spend most time talking about today, is grain yield divided by the available N. So grain yield is a fraction of available N. And finally, grain nitrogen yield. When we look at the decomposition of the genetic components of variance for these five traits, postanthesis nitrogen uptake efficiency, nitrogen harvest index, nitrogen utilization efficiency, and grain nitrogen yield, it's really evident that for the four traits on the right, both genotype and the genotype by year interaction contribute the substantial proportion of the genetic variance. For postanthesis nitrogen uptake, genotype was far and away the most important effect. But the interactions with nitrogen rate were generally non-significant. Given these very significant year interactions, we needed to analyze the years separately. Now, we're looking at these traits here as though they're independent, but based on how they're calculated, they can't be. And in fact, when we look at the genetic correlations, and we'll just focus on the genetic correlation shown in the upper right quadrant in red on this table, we see that we have some very high genetic correlations of these nitrogen use efficiency traits, which you would expect. That things that underlie nitrogen utilization efficiency might also underlie nitrogen harvest index and grain nitrogen yield. So if we improve one, we'll improve them all. Importantly, we also have significant negative genetic correlations with flowering date and plant height. That is, as wheat varieties flowered later and were taller, they were less nitrogen use efficient across the board. So late tall wheats, less nitrogen use efficient. And that's illustrated here for nitrogen utilization efficiency versus plant height in 2013. Very clear negative linear relationship. I implemented the GWAS in GAPIT because of its model selection capabilities, its ability to test many possible models and pick the best one based on Bayesian information criteria. I had 16,000 filtered SNPs from the 90K iSelect assay, and I used as covariates, this is important, covariates markers for the two dwarfing genes, the two reduced height alleles, and the two photoperiod alleles that would confer different sensitivity to day length that would control that flowering date. We provided four principal components to control for structure and used the additive relationship matrix for kinship and did the association analysis in individual environments using blues. Now we'll look first at the fixed effects that were retained for these five traits in both years. And really the take-home message from this table is that for these five traits, in both years of the study, generally speaking, those dwarfing genes and photoperiod genes were retained as significant fixed effects in the models for the association analysis. They were important. Moreover, the principal components rarely mattered. So that tells me that most of the structure in the population is likely explained by the dwarfing and photoperiod alleles. Okay. So we look first at the R-squared, the variation explained just by these fixed effects and the kinship matrix, and a relatively high proportion of the variation is explained by these basic important alleles and kinship. As much as 48% for postanthesis nitrogen uptake in 2012. So a lot of variation for nitrogen use efficiency is being explained just by fixed effects. And we'll contrast that with the variation that's explained by the very best SNP that we map. And the very best SNP, the improvement by adding a SNP is often very modest relative to the base variation explained by the fixed effects in our GWAS. So we're not finding any silver bullets in the GWAS. So if we looked just within the subset of semi-dwarf lines, the 75% of lines that were semi-dwarf in 2013 at nitrogen utilization efficiency, and we provide a fairly generous level of threshold for significance, we can identify five QTLs that when we do a best NIP marker regression explain about 20% of the variation, and some of the additive effects would result in an improvement of about 7% in nitrogen utilization efficiency. Okay? So there might be something there. But what I want to point out is that if we do the GWAS across all the lines in the panel, include those talls, okay, the full set of lines, we would have identified a different set of QTLs. And we would have, the QTLs shown in yellow, and we would have missed the QTLs that were important within the subset of semi-dwarf lines. Complete analysis, even with including the RHT alleles as covariates, we would have missed the things that we needed to find within our semi-dwarf germplasm. If I just throw onto the Manhattan plot the QTLs for all five NUE traits in 2 years, it looks like this. And we find QTLs on nearly every chromosome in the A genome and every chromosome in the B genome and on 5D. There are QTLs everywhere. And none of them are hugely significant. And when we tabulate them, we find that we have different QTLs for 2012. They're shown in blue, 2013 in red. We have different QTLs for different traits on different chromosomes in different years. With the exception of a QTL for nitrogen uptake efficiency, I'm being really careful with this mouse so I don't advance the slide, QTL for nitrogen uptake efficiency here on chromosome 3B that was significant both in 2012 and 2013. So one consistent QTL among the whole set. So my take-home messages from a whole lot of crawling on the ground and sickling plants and grinding up tissue and picking off heads, okay? Dwarfing and photoperiod genes matter, and they matter a lot. They matter a lot. Within semi-dwarf, and this shouldn't be news, within semi-dwarf genotypes, there are numerous minor effect QTLs, and those effects are inconsistent across traits and environments. We have critical needs for less labor-intensive phenotyping and for marker strategies that will incorporate these numerous small effect alleles and will be able to incorporate the kind of environmental variation that we encountered in the 2 years of this study. And with that, thank you.